article I need to give you at some point. Erica sent it my way. Are you familiar with New York Magazine?
New York or New Yorker?
New York. Yes, I know. That's what I thought.
Okay.
Too. New York Magazine. Sort of pretentious New York city.
I mean, you're naming yourself New York Magazine, so you've got to be
sort of pretentious.
At least a little bit pretentious.
But it's really interesting. I saw the cover of it. So she, I keep giving her my airplane miles for magazines.
Okay.
Because I get like not enough to use to fly, but enough.
And
to...
she likes magazines, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Okay.
And she, I thought she had hit critical mass with the People magazine being every week, and she like moans every time she gets one. She's like, ah. But then she subscribed to like four more magazines, but she carefully picked ones that you get like two a year. Like she cut down. Anyway, the title of this caught my eye when it came, the cover. It was Democracy Has Never Been So Ripe for Tyranny. Was the
That sounds really familiar.
It's
I may have seen it magazine. Online.
You might have, it's pretty good. It's like it's a bunch of Trump supporters in black and white on the cover. It's a really good scholarly, you know, sort of thesis essay kind of thing. Very New York intelligentsia. I'm definitely digging it. But you know, he talks about Plato or Aristotle. I'm forgetting now. I was in the middle of the article and I already forgot. Whoever's talking about the dialogue of democracies.
Probably
I don't know. Whose mentor was killed? So they made Aristotle drink the hemlock, or was it?
No.
Socrates.
Socrates.
So who was his?
Plato's.
That was his
creation.
Mentor.
Yeah.
Okay, so Plato was the one talking about democracies, and he talks about how they inherently become so democratic that tyranny arises. And he likens it fairly well to what's happening right now, and so he makes the case for how, and he's not judgmental, but is he saying like. We live in an era where gays can get married in 50 states, but the white working class is like there has been denigrated in terms of their religion. Like they're being called old fashioned and outdated and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you're getting this very strange.
But that happens with every generation, I think.
Yes, but the inequalities are being addressed at the expense of the former majority. We've talked about this, you know.
We have.
And again, I don't think he's really coming out on any side, but he's making a case for the fact that Plato may have been very prescient in this. And he was talking about a different time, so obviously it isn't exactly the same. But when you look at Trump supporters, they're, from what I've seen, a lot of white, you know, blue-collar folks.
But they're actually not.
They're not? Okay, so...
They're actually not. It's a misconception.
Mm.
The average Trump supporter is not... I really hesitate to say blue collar. The average Trump supporter is actually reasonably well off white people.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, and when you look at the demographics, because everybody was kind of assuming it's like, oh, this is like the average Joe kind of guy,
right?
But it's really not that.
Okay,
he's more of an appeal to, kind of like to people who are like not. Not super well off, but certainly comfortable.
Above the middle class.
Yeah, above average.
So not the elite. But
then when you start using a label like middle class, that opens a whole other can of worms. Above average income. That's the average.
Well, the problem with the middle class is it's both above and below the median income. So
yeah,
and that's shrunk over time too.
It has.
Which is disturbing.
So... It's the people who aren't doing really badly.
So you. So people in your situation probably would follow. I'm not saying you support Trump, but I'm just saying.
No. Yeah, maybe.
But you're probably a little more educated. I know. Are these educated people?
Yeah, I think so.
That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
That is fucking terrifying.
Yeah. They're just kind of assholes.
So Trump gets the asshole vote.
Yeah, he really does.
He actually does. In the article, he says, like, we've been trained for, after 14 seasons of The Apprentice, like, people in America have been trained to root for him as an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's scary because it's like, you know he's an asshole. And assholes are not really good for the country as leaders, yet you're still kind of hoping he makes it all the way. I mean, I'm not. I'm just saying this is what the case is.
Well, so. Then you've got, you know, Paul Ryan, who's like, oh, yeah, what Trump said was totally racist. I still support him for president.
When the Republican leaders call someone racist,
yeah, there's
kind
of a tip-off
weird
there.
Imbalance as to what the fuck is going on.
All right, what am I doing to myself tonight? This is probably not the best choice.
You're giving yourself tetanus.
This is the classic Rusty Nail.
Classic.
Simple. Delicious. It's one of those drinks that you get when you're like, I'm not fucking around. I want to get drunk. Which I really don't tonight. So hopefully this is small enough.
It looks pretty. I mean, it's just pure alcohol. There's no filler in it. So
it's rye whiskey and Drambuie. You can probably say that better than I can.
No, I think it's either Drambuie or Drambuie.
I mean, with the accent.
Drambuie.
There we go.
Oh, you're talking about some rye and some Drambuie.
That's what you want.
I didn't realize what you're doing. I'm sorry. And I can't fucking turn it off. Shite. Got to do the rest of the fucking podcast like this. It's going to be a bitch to edit. I'm going to be like, what the fuck am I saying?
So, yeah. It's two the two ingredients are both right around 40% alcohol. Which
it's not fucking around.
Yeah, it's not fucking around.
It's basically doing shots.
Yes.
Watered down.
So I have like basically two shots worth in here.
Yes, and I have about...
You got at least three.
Three or four.
Maybe four. Yeah.
Well, like you said, I'm not driving. Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are...
S. Michael Smith, and you are...
And Michael Carassi. We're getting drunk in my basement. Like any other podcast night.
So you can drink... Drambuie neat or on the rocks or whatever.
Your wife likes it, right?
Yeah, she does. That is a super sipping drink because it's so sweet and so rich.
Cloying and...
I don't even know it's cloying.
If you drink enough, does it build up in the back of your throat?
You can't because there's too much alcohol in it to drink that fast.
No, not fast. Just over time. If you had a bunch. You know that Mike's Hard Lemonade feeling where it starts to...
Oh, that's just gross, though.
But no, not the taste. I just mean the feeling in the back of your throat where it starts to build up like a film.
I don't know, maybe.
That's cloying. Yeah. As I've always understood it. And I've used the Mike's Hard Lemonade analogy to denigrate when I'd be waiting tables and try to talk someone out of something.
Disgusting. It's disgusting. I mean, there must be, I was going to say there must be people out there who like it, but that's probably not true. Because it's probably just like teenagers who are like, oh, this is good, hard lemonade, we can drink this and it's not beer or something. I don't know. It's any, all these stupid malt liquor drinks, and I assume it's a malt liquor drink. It has to be, right?
I think so.
It gotta be. Because that's what all that crap is, really.
It's sugar and malted alcohol. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's awful. And I can't imagine anybody who's not like 19 going for it.
Yeah, but Josh and Krista bring those over.
Oh. Do they listen to this?
I don't know. Josh, Krista, what's up?
It's really sweet, and oh my gosh.
No, so you're discounting, so you have...
It's not my flavor profile at all.
Nor should it be. So here's the thing, this is non-empirical research, just based on observing people over years of waiting tables and drinking. But you, even though you don't have a wide breadth of alcohol that you drink, like you've kind of been forced to close yourself off to certain types of alcohol.
Well, yeah, the ones that will kill me, yeah.
Right. Which most people don't have that issue. But you still have a fairly sophisticated palate despite that. You're not going to be sipping on some Rothschild, you know, talking about the virtues of the 03 summer and how hot and wet it was. But my point is, you still have a much more sophisticated palate and you've been exposed to a lot of things. I mean, how many people are going to hear the word Caesar and not go, ew, when they hear what's in it? You know what I mean? So don't discount the fact that there a lot of people in this country don't either know how to drink or don't know, like, why to drink or what to drink.
Well, this is all, I agree with this. And for a long time, I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I drank beer when I was in high school and then drank nothing from the time I got into college until like I was well into my 20s.
Okay.
Which is
a pivotal learning time for a lot of people when it comes to booze.
And learning your limits it is, but learning what's good.
Unfortunately, you don't have a lot of limits at that time. There was a former college president, I don't know from what school, but when I was in school, I remember hearing about this and thinking it was a really good idea. He was campaigning to lower the alcohol limit age back to 18. And he said, let me explain this because I am not a heavy drinker. But he said, when I went to school, because this man was in like his 50s or 60s, he said, when I went to school, when I went to university, we could drink at 18. And what I did was I drank with my professors. We had stimulating discourse at the pub. And I learned how to drink like an adult from other adults.
Right.
which I think is a great point. He said, now we've closed it off, stigmatized it, made it illegal, but not made it hard at all for kids to get booze.
Right. And that's what the kids do. Kids get booze when they're, you know, 18 or 19 or whatever. And they drink it in little clandestine parties.
And
where there are no adults.
There are no adults. There's no understanding of how to drink and why to drink.
And if there were an adult there, the adult would be arrested.
If they got caught.
Yeah, yeah. But an adult doesn't want to be at these things.
No. That is the, if there's booze here, don't tell me kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I thought this guy had a really great point. And this is, you know, we coddle. I was thinking about this today on my run for some reason. You know, we coddle kids differently in this country than, like, Europe does. It's like in Europe, they expose children conceptually to sex very early on compared to how we do. So it's
how and in what sense?
It isn't something that's taboo to talk about from an early age.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So okay. You feel like you get more sexually mature at a younger age. And I don't mean a child. I just mean, you know, you see people in relationships in Europe who there's a lot of like wider age range.
Okay.
I mean, in New York, I noticed that a lot. Like, there'd always be Europeans and they'd be like, she'd be way younger than the guy or vice versa. And it didn't seem that weird to them. And it was just, you get this impression from what I've always heard that Europeans just have a better understanding of sex. But, I'm not making like a weird sexual joke. I just mean just the actual act of sex and relationships. They have a slightly better understanding of it because it's not withheld from them. But they do not, or used to not, expose children to violence the way we do.
Oh. Okay.
So they kind of flip-flopped. And, you know, this is like intrinsic in their profanity. Like, what's profane to them is, like, related to the blood of Christ. What's profane to the Americans is sexual in nature. You ever notice that? You can tell a lot about a culture by what is considered the subject of profanity. Bloody hell, you know, Holy Mary, Mother of God. These are English terms, and they derive from, and this is, you know, I read about this years ago. They derive from, you know, Catholicism and religion. Well, I guess Protestant. Whereas we have fuck, shit, you know, things, bodily functions and sex and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also a lot fewer letters.
Yes. It's very satisfying. I think we've talked about this. Like, American curse words are fucking satisfying to say. Like, fuck. It's just such a strong, round at the back, consonant driven word.
It is, but it's almost too simple. And would you almost rather say bollocks?
No. But you know, I like to string profanity. So it's really easy to string American profanity. Because you can just fucking roll a shit ton of goddamn cocksucking, bitch licking, ball slapping fucking good fucking curse words into that fucking sentence. You know what I mean? And it's harder to do that with multisyllabic
harder, profanity. But it's more impressive.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, if you gotta... I can't do it. I can't.
No.
Too much work.
Yeah, it is. You have to work up to it. You have to practice.
You have to practice.
You have to, like, have your katas in place.
Now it's gung fu. It's curse fu.
It is. You gotta string together those combos.
Multiplier. It's funny. I think that it's difficult to curse in another, even another English-speaking language culturally, because I think you need to internalize the profanity.
Yes.
You know? So saying bollocks, just, I understand that it's a bad word to someone, but to me, it just makes me want to giggle.
Yeah.
It's like bollocks.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't have the same impact. But it is fucking, and I haven't said, if I said this before, I apologize. I'm sure I've said this to you at some point. It is fucking apeshit bananas to me that as a culture, we have this tiny subset of words that are fun to say, that are weighted more than just about any other word in our language, right? Like this handful of words.
Yes.
And we tell people, don't use them. Don't you use them. You can twist them slightly and say mother jumper, but don't you say, you know what? That's crazy to me. It just makes me want to say them more.
It is. It's quaint, though, I think. You say crazy, I say quaint.
Yeah, okay, same thing. Potato, potato.
Eccentric.
Facato, facato.
So are we gonna keep talking politics? Because there was big news yesterday, which was actually the big news today.
Hillary?
Yes.
Yes.
So we're recording this
Wednesday the 8th, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. So there was a kind of a kerfuffle last night. Not really kerfuffle. A lot of feathers got ruffled in the kerfuffle.
By a kerfuffle.
So
with a sneeze and a snuffle.
The AP, the Associated Press, last night, I don't know if you know about this, they announced that Hillary had... That she was, she had enough delegates to be the presumptive nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that because I think they had got word that they had found out from legitimate sources that
she had won California.
Some of the, no. This is because California was today.
Oh, okay.
This is last night. Okay. So they found out from some legitimate sources that Hillary had actually secured enough delegates and superdelegates.
Right.
To put her over the margin. And so the AP was like, and this is yesterday, which was the day before today, and today there were primaries in California and New Jersey and Washington D.C. maybe, I don't know, a couple other places.
I feel like Washington's the last.
Maybe that's it.
I think that's the final one.
But it was Jersey and it was California. California is obviously the big one, the most delegates there.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, before anybody's going out to vote, was like, oh, don't bother.
Yeah,
Hillary wins.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It is and it isn't.
At this point in the game...
It's not going to make a difference.
Not going to make a difference.
Not going
to
make a
and
difference.
And I said all along, Bernie's not going to win. I voted for Bernie in the primary, but he was not going to win.
I voted for Bernie as well. I am now completely aboard
the Hillary
with Hillary's team. Yeah, absolutely.
So
unequivocally.
I want to be aboard the anyone but Trump train, but that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because if enough people vote for Gary Johnson... then you suddenly have an issue where you're splitting the vote from Hillary, and then that's how Trump can waltz into the
White House. Johnson's going to take votes from both sides, though.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, did you hear that Trump's trying to get former Bernie supporters?
Of course he is.
But it's just so asinine to be like, who the fuck is supporting Bernie? He's going to be like, oh, you know what? Trump.
Some of them. Oh, some of them. I'm sure they
people
will.
People are stupid.
Yeah, well. Anyway, it's really the whole thing with the AP, and a lot of people are upset, but it's really not a big deal. It wasn't going to affect the outcome, no matter how much Bernie supports it. And it's not going to affect one side, especially more than the other. At least I don't see how it is. Because a Hillary supporter is going to be just as likely as a Bernie supporter to say, oh, if my vote doesn't matter, I'm going to stay home today.
Right.
You know, that's not... I don't see how that gives either side an advantage or disadvantage.
I think you're right. I don't think Bernie was going to take it.
No, and he didn't, actually.
Right. No, it was like 64...
Yeah, it was...
36.
Hillary got it pretty handily.
Yeah, she did.
Which is really... It's good. I mean, you want... Man. You want it to be something that's solid, that's definitive, that we can all look at and say, oh, yeah, Hillary did clearly win this. And she did. Even before California, she was like... She had like maybe 30% more popular votes than
she
Sanders.
Had the traction, she had the widespread support, and she was going to take the primary. I never doubted that. I didn't want it, but I never doubted it. That's actually something really interesting that the article was coming out in defense of, which was all of the checks and balances put in by the founding fathers and so in support of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never heard anyone defend the Electoral College before. But it was really interesting. And this guy's point is he said, you know, the founding fathers were big fans of Plato, and they were very well aware that they had to establish a system of government that prevented tyranny from arising.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the checks and balances come from. That's why the president chooses the Supreme Court, but it has to be ratified. That's why there's a counterbalance to the House. Right. So you can't. So basically, the whole point is there are tons and tons of preventions from the popular vote ruling the day, because the whole point, I guess, in Plato's Democracy or whatever is when a tyrant rises by, you know, using the mass public to get their side. And he makes some really scary parallels. But the point is that
and the irony of a few years ago when Gore won the popular vote, but Bush won the Electoral College.
He brought that up, too. Yeah, it's... But that brings up the point of, well, the game is at least partly rigged in a way that is not good. I mean, The superdelegates thing. I still don't get that. I don't get
it. Oh, okay. I thought they explained that.
No. We did. Okay. I just don't get why it's there.
It's an emergency system. It's not...
Then why is it there all the time? You know what I mean?
It's recent. It's... It goes... I forget which election it goes back to. One of the seasons, it was either like Dukakis or somebody. And it was a weak candidate. It's there...
It's they their anti-Trump, never
want to use right? it. It. Yeah, effectively, the Democratic leadership hopes to God they never have to use this. The superdelegates will never matter, and in this year they aren't. They are not mattering. No,
they're really not.
It's an emergency thing. I think the Republicans are wishing they had that right about now.
I bet you anything Paul Ryan is wishing to God he had fucking superdelegates yeah. up his sleeve right now. Yeah, you're right.
But, you know, it could be that. It could be somewhere and there was like a more than a two-way tie or, you know, if you had three candidates or more by the end of the primary voting season, you know, what do you do with that?
Right.
It's almost like a shortcut to not having to have a runoff election or something. It's there to avoid a mess, and the specifics of that mess are just kind of, we don't know what could happen. Things right. could happen that could cause this to be important. That's kind of a wishy-washy, shitty answer, but that's it. It's an emergency system that they don't. They never want to break that glass.
Okay, I'll accept that. I just hope Hillary wins. That's unfortunately where I'm at right now. I'm voting for a dynasty that I'm not convinced has the average person in best interest and is probably under the sway of corporations. But it's the devil I know. Versus the next incoming of Hitler.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Hitler, did you hear that they found... No, this is not happy, but it's interesting. Like, this week, they found, I think, 16,000 artifacts from their concentration camps.
Artifacts?
Like possessions from the Jews that had been sitting in storage, forgotten about since 67. So they excavated them back in 67, put them in a bunch of cardboard boxes and dumped them in some random university storeroom and then just forgot about them.
So is this something that's like as horrible as this is to think that they're sending people off to die in gas chambers?
These were the things that were piled right outside of the gas chamber. The last personal possessions that people took with them right until they were gassed.
Wow.
Yeah. So 16,000 possessions. And there's been this one guy who's been looking for them for decades. And he's like, we only have 400 like personal possessions. Like, that seems insane to me that it's so low. Where's the rest of them? So he was looking and looking and looking. And then he's like, I basically given up. And then we just found it.
And this is so awful because these aren't just possessions. These are like the things that people that were absolutely the most dear to people.
These were the portable, sentimental like items that they had to give up.
I've been pushed on a train. I've been, you know, somehow I've managed to keep this sneak thing and keep this whatever thing with me throughout this whole ordeal.
And these are not the gold and that kind of stuff. Those were long, as far as I understand, those were long since taken by the Nazis.
These would be lower monetary value, like a favorite smoking pipe,
that kind of thing. Yeah. But I just thought it was interesting because...
So what are they doing? Are they making an exhibit with
it? Yeah, they're going to put it in a museum. I mean, at this point, I don't know if there's any way to figure out, you know, whose descendants... Because it belongs in a
museum.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, that was a week. Yeah, that was... Seriously, though, it does. It really does belong in the museum.
No, it does. I mean, how would you even figure out who it belongs to, whose descendants it belongs to? Like that, I can't even imagine trying to open that can of worms.
But, no.
Yeah, I mean, it further tells the story. It's a story that's been told, but it's something that... Now more than ever, when you have a president who targets minorities, or I'm sorry, thank God that hasn't happened yet. When you have a presumptive Republican presidential candidate who targets minorities, you need to be reminded of this shit. Like, this is what happens when you hate people enough.
Yeah.
And you get people stirred up enough. You kill those people, and that's really not good. Let's keep that in mind so it never happens again.
Yeah.
So I notice you have a book.
Oh, are we doing the book? Because I just got it out of my pocket to get it out of my pocket.
I don't know. I just
my phone was like buzzing, and I was gonna. I'm making noise now.
Well, we're heading into depressing, dark territory. Noise. So
yeah, we need to get out of here. Which this book might do the opposite.
Ooh.
All right. So this I've brought this book to every one of our podcasts for like the past 2 or 3 months.
Yep.
We never open it.
Nope.
It's kind of like our emergency backup plan.
It's our super delegates.
It's our super delegates. Yes, exactly. But it's out, and do you want to break the glass? You want to break that glass?
We don't actually need to. We can save it for next time if you want.
Well, we brought it up. Yeah. Either we're deleting this whole part of the conversation, or I think we have
to. Yes, I always edit all those things out. You know, actually, there is one thing I thought we should mention really quick.
Okay.
We can do the book, but Erica did feel bad about what she discovered later about your cube.
Oh, okay.
And she had kind of wished we had talked about it on the podcast, so maybe we should talk about that really quick.
Yeah, I don't have the cube book.
No. I mean, yeah. So the way you describe what your cube looked like on the pedestal.
Yes.
She misinterpreted.
Yeah.
And she thought that it was sitting flat on a pedestal with a corner pointing.
With an edge
pointing down.
Right.
Perfectly balanced.
No, that's not what I
described. But it's not what you described. So what did you describe?
I described it as being not a big cube, but it's on a pedestal and it's on a point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sitting like kind of, if you would look at it, almost like see it like a diamond shape.
And you said you could spin it like a top. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is actually a very specific cube from this book.
That exists with the pedestal. That was so crazy. So later, so you guys came over like the next day for dinner and we cubed your wife.
Yeah.
And we were sitting around. And then Erica was flipping through the book and she like freaked out. And she's like, oh my God, I didn't realize like we were making fun of you because of the pedestal.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a pedestal. But the one instance in the book where there is a pedestal is the exact thing that you described. And that was the something perfectionist.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, something perfectionist, which seems perfect to me.
Well, it definitely described you to a T, I thought. It was very funny.
I mean, we don't have the book, but no. I mean, you just take the descriptor perfectionist.
Yeah.
And that really resonates with me, so to speak. But, as I search for the perfect word to put there.
To pontificate on my perfection and perfectionism. But yeah, it was very interesting. So she showed us the picture and everything. There was the exact thing you described in the book, and it was pretty rare. And she had never seen it before. I didn't even know it was in the book. I totally just found it later.
So, yes. And I can't even remember what the other description was.
But. Yeah, I think it was just interesting that like we thought you were one weird thing. Turned out you were another weird thing. That made slightly more sense.
It made a lot more sense, really.
Okay, a lot more sense.
So credit to the cube.
Credit to the cube.
More credit to the cube.
To the cube.
Oh my God, you've already finished that?
What did I tell you? I am a lush.
All right. I got a nice cube in my mouth. Here, read this.
This is the Book of Questions. It's a number one New York Times bestseller. So do you say a New York Times number one bestseller or do you say a number one New York Times bestseller?
I would say New York Times number one bestseller.
Yeah, that's how I would think too.
But they're putting number one at the top because...
At the top.
No,
it's the most impressive part. It's the biggest part of the print. So.
Yes.
Also, it's one of those made to look like a sticker, but it's not.
But it's not really a sticker. Yeah. No.
So they're covering the title of the book slightly, but...
You fakey bastards.
Motherfuckers. So it is... There's over 1 million in print. So the back says, ask yourself. Ask your friends. Ask your parents. Ask someone you hardly know. The Book of Questions gives you permission to ask those things that are too bold, too embarrassing, or just too difficult to ask by yourself.
So what this really is a way for... Oh my God, I can't say this without sounding awful. I'm going to sound awful.
If it's so bad, I'll edit it out. If not, I'll leave it out.
It's bad. This is a way for... women to torture their boyfriends or husbands.
Okay. I got cubed, so yeah.
And that is probably a terribly sexist way to put this, but that's what I think that's really the big audience for this.
Wow.
Cause it's got, I mean, I'm looking at the cover.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a guy there. It's got a guy in it. But it's got pastel colors. This is a very feminine looking cover to me. Am I wrong?
No. I'm just imagining that guy appeal to women. I just imagine that guy being the boyfriend, like, oh fuck.
Only yeah, one of these answers. The crossroads.
I am so fucked.
And one of these three paths that he's about to choose is the right one. The other two will leave him fucked.
And if I go back, my partner leaves me.
So. Yes. So yeah, it's basically a bunch of questions. How many is it? Like 200? 200 questions in here. They're all these like the questions that men don't want to hear from women. Let's see what we get here.
So you just open the book at random?
I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
Let me ask you a question first.
Oh, okay. All right.
52, 53, or 54?
I didn't even look at them, so yeah, I don't know.
Just pick a number.
I like 54 because it's divisible by 9.
Oh, that's going to be a good one. Smike, since we've been dating for 6 months now, I think
I retract feeling bad about saying that.
I just this added that.
Absolutely. What? Oh, okay.
Wait, did you think that was in the question?
Yeah, I did. I thought that was.
No.
All right.
I was just proving right. You're a Throw titanic.
Throw it in again. Throw it in again.
Misogynistic asshole.
Yeah.
Smike, since we've been dating for 6 months, I want to know, I feel like I'm talking on a reality TV show, what is the worst psychological torture you can imagine suffering? Anything causing even minor physical injury should not be considered. So 100% psychological torture. What is the worst you can imagine suffering?
Man, psychological torture.
And this doesn't say causing injury to you. It says anything causing even minor physical injury.
Okay.
So like someone torturing your wife is out.
Okay.
And saying Trump is president is too easy. So I'm going to nix that from the start.
Just being like restrained. I think is
like the
is
room
awful, like the what?
Not Tommy Wiseau's Room, but the movie The Room.
I don't know.
Never mind. Okay, go on.
Don't know what that one is.
So restrained, like tied up.
Yeah, I get the point where I have to move sometimes.
Okay.
And some of the worst psychological times I've had, just by. Caused by my surroundings, I'm getting really weird now. I think of being in the hospital. That's what I think of.
Okay.
There have been times when I've been there's one time I remember being in the hospital. I was in bad shape. I was sick. I wasn't like broken, thank God. But being in the hospital, being in the bed, I couldn't really roll over because the bed was kind of like
tilted forward.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of cold and there were bright lights. And that was just awful. I mean, it was really, I think there was actually two different times I've been in that situation. And it's just,
was the other one an alien abduction?
No, I can't recall as such.
Okay. That's a weird response. All right.
My handlers don't like that. But yeah, being restrained or maybe not being able to fall asleep.
Oh, yeah. But like...
And the combination of the two, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. That's interesting.
And I know that this is like a common torture or interrogation technique is to keep people in a room with bright lights so that they can't sleep.
Right.
And they don't have any place to sit down or...
There's no comfort. There's no comfort. Safety. There's no shelter. Yeah. No, I think on a really animal level, that really upsets a person.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm going along those lines.
All right.
Yeah. And again, the memory of being in the hospital bed, bright lights, can't do anything. Just bah.
That's so dumb that they can't like dim your area. Like.
Yeah, but they can't. They don't. I don't know.
It's just strange.
Unless you've got a room, and I wasn't in the room. I was right. Like in,
the big area. The
big open area.
The OSC in movies and TV shows.
Yeah, yeah. With like a curtain.
Yep, and then like beds all over the place.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. That's it.
Okay. My turn?
Sure.
So the worst psychological torture for me would be feeling helpless.
Mm-hmm.
So my family is missing and somehow I am prevented from finding out where they are, ascertaining their safety.
This sounds like a nightmare you've specifically had.
I think about this sometimes. Like the thing, like, I you know, when I run, I always, I just run mental exercises the whole time.
Okay.
Just, you know, just to keep myself. So I often will try to figure out, like, what, when I was, if I was ever put in a, like, a movie, Hollywood.
Yeah, I was thinking, this sounds like a movie. This sounds like a movie premise.
Right. But, I mean, so I run these all the time because it entertains me while I'm running. And I have determined that if someone walked into my home, I would have no problem killing them. Like, if I had even the remotest thought that they were even considering harming my family in particular, I would pick up a knife and slit their throat. No, absolutely. And you know me well enough to probably know that I'm really not exaggerating or...
No,
I would kill them so quickly. The look in your eye is
a little bit frightening right now.
Because I thought this through a lot.
I've really thought about this. I mean, really thought about this.
Well, because I'm just tempered by... Where
to put the blade and how much pressure to use.
Well, it's how quickly can you do it to render them not a threat. So yeah, I have thought a lot about that. But understand that we have neighbors with kids all over the neighborhood. What if the fucking kids next door have beer for the first time and think it's fine to break in and I kill a kid? Like, that is, it tempers my concern, right?
Right.
But... if I had that moment where it's like, I knew someone was off, right? There is an issue currently in an extended part of my family related to drug use.
Mm-hmm.
If that person, if I went upstairs and that person was in my home, they would be dead within a second. No doubt. There isn't a risk. And I know legally to kill them, not to hurt them. You know that, right?
Yeah.
I had a friend who his home was broken into, and so he was talking to a police officer about it, and the policeman said, "Do you have a gun?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Here's the deal. I'm going to tell you this on the side. Do not shoot to wound. And if you shoot them just outside your door, drag them in." This is what the cop told this guy I used to work with. He's like, "Make sure they died or look like they died in at least partly in your home. And then you will have no problems legally." So that always was so weird. It stuck in my head. But yes. So my point is that that's a really dark, twisted. I'm revealing way more of myself than I'm supposed to with this question. So that is
the book is working. Oh my gosh.
God damn it! But it's the kind of shit I think about. I am my own girlfriend. So given you know the extent I will go to protect my family, right? If I sense threat in my own home. So given that, if I were to look at the monitor, my son's missing.
Then this is why I never make direct eye contact with any other members of your family.
I don't even know what that means.
I'm not looking at them, Mike. I'm just here. I'm not looking at them.
Oh, Smike, I don't think you're a threat at all. Oh, turn that one around. If I looked at them, we're watching my son right now fall asleep, right? Because my wife's out. So
I'm not looking at him, though.
That's fucking right, you're not. If I looked and he was gone and I went upstairs and somehow all the exits were sealed and I couldn't get out, that would be the worst possible thing to ever happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I would just fucking flip out. I mean, like smashing chairs and windows kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like the inability to protect my family without even like being hobbled, just physically incapable somehow. Or, you know, that feeling of like, you know, actually the perfect thing is why I will not play that one game where your kid gets kidnapped. Heavy Rain. That's why I will not play Heavy Rain.
Oh,
even before I had a kid, I wouldn't play it. So you're in a mall.
Yeah.
Someone takes your kid.
The balloon.
Yeah. Yeah. That, like, you can't just punch everyone you see and save your kid. Like, life doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? Like, there is no way to fix that easily. And that would just be, like, the single worst feeling in the world. Like, just thinking about it just makes my heart feel sad.
Okay. Maybe we should find a different question.
No. It's fine. But, yeah, so there you go. It's hard because of the no physical pain part, right? So you have to remove that from the equation. Go to sleep. Okay. Your turn.
All right, 214 or 215?
15 for life. Wait, 2? Oh, it goes past 200?
It does, apparently.
Hmm.
Although, it kind of jumps around. I'm not really sure how this works.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It goes from 2... What?
I don't understand this at all.
Okay. It's a choose-your-own-adventure?
Maybe? I don't know.
I thought it was in numerical order.
I don't know. There's some weird stuff in the back of the book.
It's like comments about some of the answers, maybe?
Maybe?
It's like the cube. It's telling you what it means.
I'm curious now. What is it? How would it answer at this point? Oh, that's stupid. No, never mind. Not going to look at that.
All right.
All right. 214 or 215? You said 215.
215. I'm a fiver.
Before we get married, I need to know this.
Seriously?
Would you?
So that really does. Or are you adding that too? You're adding that too. Okay. Man, I just fell for it too.
Before we get married, I need to know this. Would you like to be elected president of this country? Why?
Nope.
If so...
Nope.
Yeah, nope. This is dumb. This is a kind of a dumb one. Why? If so, would you still choose to be president if it meant that your sleep would always be very fitful and disturbed, punctuated by frequent nightmares? Of course it would! No!
What president comes out of a presidency without aging 300 times the amount of age that they are? Jesus Christ, no! I have said at length, future spouse, what is it, future wife, is that what they say in room?
Sure.
Future wife and future husband. In Tommy Wiseau's
Yeah,
I said my many times on this podcast, I think the political system's broken, so I would fucking not be the one to fix it.
No.
Because I would be up there and be like, let it burn, bitches! The purge is legal.
Yeah, let's do 214 instead, because that was too easy.
That was dumb.
Before our fifth date, please answer this question.
Okay.
What important decision in your professional life have you based largely upon your intuitive feelings?
Oh, okay.
That's kind of a weird one.
Well, no, I can, acting wise, I can speak to that.
Okay.
There was a moment in my life that, if it were a movie, would split into two parallel storylines. One of which I probably become rich and famous, and the other where I am right now.
Okay.
So there was one time in my life where I was good at auditioning.
Mm-hmm.
One time. It lasted about a month. I had worked tirelessly with Rita, my acting coach. Mm-hmm. And she knew that I wasn't very good at auditioning. And she just drilled me and I was fucking ready. And I lined up a whole bunch of auditions with agents.
Mm-hmm.
But paying for them, because that's how things work in New York.
Yeah.
And I had multiple agency offers. And it came down to going with Abrams, which is a very good agency, but only their commercial side.
Mm-hmm.
Or going with this boutique agency that did both, mm-hmm. commercial and legit.
But not as big.
Nowhere. It was a mom and pop.
Okay.
And boy, did I make the wrong decision in terms of an acting career. I went with the mom and pop because I wanted to get both.
Mm-hmm.
And within no time at all, half the agency folded. It was two people running it, and the one guy was like, I'm out. I never met him. And then I basically never heard from her. And then by then I, just kind of moved on from the amount of acting training I was doing. But the other woman loved me with Abrams and was a big agency. And a couple years later, I went back to her and I was like, hey, can I audition for you again? And she goes, why didn't you sign with me years ago? I have 10 of you now. That was exactly what she said to me.
Aww.
So my intuitive hunch. So I was never meant to make it as an actor. Because my gut was just wrong. And if you can't listen to your gut in that kind of situation, you're probably in the wrong industry. And that's my story.
Hmm.
And I was really angry about this in myself for a long time. And now I'm like, fuck it, it's fine. All right. Smike, same question.
Man, it is tough. This is actually a tough question.
I just happen to have a really juicy...
Yeah. Long pause, long pensive pause.
I'll edit it out. I'll make it look like you have an instant answer.
I think I have to go back to dropping out of grad school.
Ah, okay.
The first time I did.
I mean, who's counting?
I am. But anyway, I graduated from Grinnell College.
Mm-hmm.
I had a degree in English. A concentration in theater.
Okay.
What am I going to do with that? And kind of a concentration in philosophy and religion.
Wow. Yeah, that's a triple degree in burger flipping.
You're getting out of a small liberal arts college. You have a BA in literature. What do you do?
Law school.
No. That's a good answer, though. That is an excellent answer.
Most people don't realize that actors becoming lawyers is not uncommon.
Yeah. But the answer I went with was... the answer that a lot of people sort of gave to me by saying, oh, an English major, are you going to teach? I guess I'll teach.
Wow, that sounds like you were all for it.
I didn't know what else to do.
Sure.
I thought, okay, I didn't especially like children. That should have been my first clue.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, it seemed like I didn't have a better option. It was the natural thing to do for me.
Okay. Well, when you don't, it was your version of the military.
Yeah.
You don't have another thing to do. So.
Yeah. So I got into graduate school. I got into a very good graduate school at Vanderbilt University.
It sounds terribly good.
It is. And it was the Peabody School of Education, which was one of the top, if not the top, educational schools. Damn. By educational school, I mean education as a subject, not to get an education.
Schools for education.
Yes.
Yes. Is Vanderbilt one of the Seven Sisters?
Maybe. I don't remember.
With like Vassar and all those?
It might be. I don't know.
All right. Anyway.
Anyway, great school, great program. I dropped out of it about midway through my master's degree program.
You got that far?
Well, that, I mean, what do you mean that far? You mean halfway that far?
Yeah, that's like at least a year, right?
Yeah, it was about a year.
Okay.
I think it was maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it was incredibly stressful. And I was never at a point where like, oh God, I can't wait to get out of here and actually start teaching.
Why was it stressful, out of curiosity?
Well, it was a lot of work.
Okay.
And it was learning a lot of like classroom management stuff. Mm. And it was just me going on and constantly being like, what am I going to do when I'm actually having to teach a class? And it just wasn't for me. And I punted away a fair amount in student loans. And
I bet.
It was not an easy decision for me to make, but it felt like I was just doing the wrong thing.
So it was the right decision.
I think it was. I mean, and where I am now, I'm certainly pretty doing pretty well not teaching.
Not teaching children and being miserable.
Yeah, yeah.
No classroom management here.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're still working in a school, oddly enough. That's weird.
It's a little bit weird. But I guess that was a gut call for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It didn't seem like a rational call. It seemed like I was doing something totally wrong when I dropped out.
So that's, okay, this is interesting. So I think that's the example of a good, correct gut instinct. So we have the opposite. I was convinced I was doing the right thing by going with the smaller agency because I was applying wants over my gut, right? Yeah. Whereas you were struggling and you didn't want to do this, right? And you had to overcome that and say that I have to do this. That's your gut overwhelming your mind. My mind was overwhelming my gut instinct.
Okay.
So I think we have the two different examples.
Yeah, my mind was definitely saying, you're in a school. You paid for this.
Right.
Student loans.
Exactly.
You can't just walk away from this.
What else are you going to do? Yeah. No, exactly.
Ugh. Is it stressing you out just thinking about it? Memories.
That's okay. I've admitted
that I'm
basically a serial killer. So.
This is an awful book. What the hell?
Damn you, book.
How are people not like walking away from each other after somebody brings this up?
But they probably are. This is the three relationships this guy's already lost. He's walking out of another one. He's going to fuck up three more. He's like, God damn it. This fucking book is everywhere. Back in, this looks older. When did this come out? Oh, this is the 80s. Okay. Yeah.
Of course. This looks like 80s bullshit.
To mom and dad for giving me the security to question and the independence to seek my own answers. Fuck you. Okay. 32,
33,
or
34?
33. Gotta go 33. Oh, the 33 double
trendy, RPM.
Eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Made it audiophile and not religious.
There we go. Yes.
Oh, here we go. This should be good.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Smike, before I decide to spend the rest of my life with you.
Yes. Yes. There we go.
What is the greatest accomplishment of your life? Is there anything you hope to do that is even better?
Oh, man. Well, the first and most obvious answer.
Just get out of the way. Say it.
Is marrying my wife.
She's not listening to the podcast, but you had to say it. No, I get it.
But that's, I have to.
Okay.
I mean, that's been the greatest thing I've done. And obviously, for you, it's raising a child. It's raising a child.
Yes. Of course.
Now that we've gotten those out of the way. Going to the lesser things.
The lesser greater things
that we can talk about a little more.
Okay. Remember, you have to then top it after you tell me this, so...
No. I don't know. I think I didn't found Unleashed by myself, but being one of the founding members and directing Unleashed Improv for such a long time... It feels weird for me to say this, but I'm very proud of that. even though I'm not part of it now, I'm proud of the fact that it's still going and they're still doing good stuff up there.
Can I say something to yeah. stroke your ego?
Yeah.
I've had a lot of improv experiences in my life, as have you. I've never, and since I'm basically done, I never had a better experience than being part of Unleashed when it like was newer and becoming like a recurring thing and not just that one-off thing you did.
Yeah.
For New Year's. Like the early days of the ongoing Unleashed, you know, as it exists now, mm-hmm. that is my fondest improv memory. More than studying in New York City, more than going to Chicago, more than any of the classes I took, that was the best time creatively that mm-hmm. I've ever experienced.
And I think that for me, that was that and the brief time after you left were the best. Those are the best times for me personally with the group, because we went and did a bunch of festivals after you left.
Yeah, I missed all the fun.
I know you missed that. But those were some awesomely good times before I was really starting to get burned out on it.
And that's the thing is, I don't think people realize this. Like improv is a burnout. In terms of organization,
I'm amazed that some of the other founding members are still in there and have just been morphed, like, fuck this, I need a break.
But it's morphed and it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, look, when I came back, I wanted out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It had changed, and yeah, that's me passing judgment on it. I will admit that. But that's also me having a predilection for a certain scenario or a certain type of improv, and it wasn't there anymore because the troupe evolved. And that's actually really impressive. Because I have yet to see an improv troupe last as long as Unleashed has. I can't name one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
and yeah. It's a great bunch of people. It was a great bunch of people that I founded it with.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's still going is.
And that everyone like has kind of grown into side projects too, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Carrie and Abby and BJ and Jeff had all their shit going on when they mm-hmm. were still there, and we did it too.
And Mark and Beth.
Mark and Beth
got yep. married.
yeah.
From meeting that way.
And they were an improv power couple in Rochester.
Yeah, they still are.
Still are, yeah.
Improv and sketch.
Yeah. I'm just out of the loop now, so I don't know who's up and who's down. Who star is ascending or descending at this point. But yeah, no, Unleashed produced way more good improv than Jeeva ever did. I mean, that's irrefutable. And yeah, obviously I still have a chip on my shoulder, but just the creative atmosphere was a creative atmosphere. You know what I mean? That first show... The first Unleashed show that we did was the single greatest improv show I've ever been in my life. It was pitch perfect. It was, the efficiency was as close to 100%. Anything anyone said got reused. And just the theme, 20 bladed razors was the suggestion. And then the places we went with that. And then the beautiful, just the way it opened with a cheap Mexican labor putting Americans out of work. And then yes. over the course of a Harold structure, it showed the decline of American society due to over being too comfortable. And yes. and it ended with the exact same scene, but it was Mexican laborers being put out of work by cheap American labor.
Who had come across the border to work,
right.
To work for just
because
for
they
coffee.
Had a coffee addiction. Yeah. Because, yeah. And the Mark and Beth scene where they were on a date, but they had TVs in their eyes.
That was me.
Oh, that was you and Beth.
That was me and Beth, yeah.
Okay. And then I had the MacBook that kept getting bigger because I just got my first Mac. It was perfect. It was the perfect show.
Okay, those are my answers.
All right.
So aside from your child and your marriage.
Just to get them out of the way.
Yep, get them out of the way because you can't top them.
They made me a better person. I wouldn't be as happy and as healthy as I am now without them. So mm-hmm. like you do actually have to acknowledge it. Yes.
I do. I'm not being facetious here.
Well, I mean, I am in a sense. Like, I'm a marriage. But yes, I do admit that they are probably actually the greatest, for me, greatest things I've ever accomplished in my life. But I will say, elsewise, the night I finished my first draft of my book, the book that is still being edited, will probably never make it anywhere. That was the moment that I put my father's ghost, who was still alive at the time, to rest. The moment I completed that book after 7 years of working on it was the moment that I said, fuck you. You made me doubt and you destroyed me for years. My self-confidence, my belief that I could ever complete anything on my own. I took 7 years and I did this on my own. I drove myself. I lost faith in myself. I came back over to it again and again, and I fucking finished it. And it was a terrible first draft. But the point is,
but well, that's interesting. I didn't know you had that relationship, that ghost from your father that was.
Well, it's actually ties
it. That was haunted. Did you know that was?
It became apparent to me over time, and actually acting made me aware of it. Interestingly enough, so you're familiar with the concept of the private audience, right?
Maybe
Terry Brown actually taught me this in college.
Okay,
my first acting class, and this I've seen this concept repeated in Sandler's sales training. It's called head trash. It's the exact same thing. But the concept is, and I think it is actually a very valid acting approach. And I, if I ever actually did serious acting again, I would know to use it now because I understand it better.
Okay.
It's a concept that everyone, a character you're playing, but you as a person, as you go through your life, you collect the naysayers and they stay in your head, right? Your parents harping on you.
Yep.
In my case, it was my father. You know, all the friend, the one or two friends that I had to end friendships with because they were so toxic. You know, like those people stay in your head. Mm-hmm. And they are your gatekeepers of the mind, to use Johnstone. Mm-hmm. This comes up again and again. So I was aware that over time, and my wife pointed out to me several times, like she was like, you're so like smart and driven and creative. Like, why don't you just believe in yourself? And then I finally had to realize like, oh, like there was a part of me that was so damaged as a kid because my father just blatantly didn't want someone smarter than him and to be his kid. That I was just made to feel like shit all the time about any thought I had. And I finally got by it by finishing the first draft of the book. So for me, probably the best thing that book will ever do has already happened. But I still like it to be a
commercial success. Was that like a revelation moment when you finished?
It was an emotional catharsis.
Or you like, were you kind of like in your head, like working up and like, yeah, I'm gonna fuck you, Dad. Just
I had to unpack. No, I had to unpack that over time. But the emotional catharsis, I was like, I get that this took me a while to write, but why is this so impactful to me? Why am I like basically crying right now, having completed this book?
Okay.
Oh, let me think about this for weeks. Oh, yeah, okay. And I talked to my wife about it, and she kind of had some insight too. But yeah, I'd say that, and my career has taken a sharp improvement in terms of what I'm capable of doing. Not that I'm paid for it, especially lately. Since I don't even get me started where I'm at right now with my job, but I'm still not that stressed, so I guess it's hard to complain. But what I learned from that in the end, the minute I put the ghost of my father that lived in my head to rest, was the moment I learned that I can actualize something. And that sounds incredibly new agey and touchy-feely, but it is fucking powerful. The minute you realize, holy shit, you can from start to finish make something exist out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's huge. And I've been employing that time and again since then. So, there you go.
All right. Good answer.
Thank you.
I don't think we have to break up.
Okay, good. Even though my book is more important than dating you, Smike, or marrying you, I forgot what scenario I gave you at that point.
You forgot? That's it. We're through.
Oh, fuck. I knew it was that path right there.
The blue one. Yep.
The blue one.
It's always the blue one. Are we out of time already?
Yeah, we are.
Aw.
That's why I wasn't sure we wanted to use the book. We were already halfway into the podcast at that point.
Wow.
We could break it out and do one or two more next time.
All right.
Or we'll just always have it on us.
Always just have it.
And we definitely, every time we have a guest, we have to torture them now. Hey, since you're here, before we have this three-way.
And we still haven't talked about the Hugo Award, but I'll save that.
Oh, shit. We didn't talk about your show either.
We didn't? Well, the show's done.
Well, I meant the experience, the...
Yeah, I can talk about that later.
You need more time to unpack it, Mike. Is it too soon? Okay, so next time we will talk about the Hugo Award email thread and all the bullshit with the Hugo Awards and how shitty old school fantasy and sci-fi writers are.
So read up on that and be prepared for
read up on listening. Just Google Hugo Award puppies and slammed in the ass. And that, wow. And clear your Google history immediately after that. And if you're doing this at work, do control shift P and bring up a private viewing session. Your bosses can still track your traffic, but they won't leave anything in your history. And why do I know that about private viewing? I don't know, because I read the internet for the stories. Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit StolenDress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. If you haven't checked out the Looking Forward Jason Clam 2020-2016 presidential campaign, it's just becoming mind-bogglingly complex.
His chances are getting better and better every day.
He's the pale horse that no one's going to see coming. it's starting to get to that point where things are really starting to come together, which is interesting. So I'm kind of just watching snippets of the like 15 other projects and the little trying to like read up on the little things that are starting to tie together. And my next video is going to actively start to become involved more now. And yeah, you should check it out. You know, keep an eye out for Clint Westfall's Baroda. It comes out once a month at the end of the month. You have nothing to promote, right?
I don't.
It's high five, bro.
It's good. I got my brain back. I got my life back now.
Yeah. Your life is back. And we still lost in Pathfinder because fuck that game.
Yeah. That was a tough one. We'll get it next time.
Fuck it. We better. I'm skipping it. I don't care. Had it. Do we get a really cool reward for beating it?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. It's like, hey, here's a pencil. It's like those old...
Here's another scale. Fuck you. We don't want these fucking scales.
You're fat with your giant headpiece, Mike. Your headpiece weighs as much as you do. Seriously, there's no ear holes in your little dwarven woman's head helmet thing. How do you hear
it's
anything?
It's porous. It's very porous. Is it? It's not as heavy as it looks.
Is it like limestone or...
It's styrofoam, honestly.
Wow, that's a weird... There's styrofoam in this mystical realm of hell beasts?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's organic, though.
Now I'm just confused.